Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
But yeah, that's awesome. I was thinking of going on a princess cruise somewhere else, but now hearing your experience, like,
choose another cruise line.
Choose another one.
Yeah, Royal Caribbean. I've heard great things about that
one. I think they're owned by Carnival, so yeah, it would be a really good one. All in America is owned by Carnival too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. My dad's like the cruise guy, so he's been telling me all this.
My husband and his family have been on like over 22 cruises. I'm like only been on 3 or 4, and it's since I've been with my husband.
You're like, I only cruise now because of my husband.
Yeah.
How many would they have to average a year to get that far?
Well, my husband's mom's side of the family, they're Caribbean. So what they would do is go on a Caribbean cruise, and then they have family in Aruba and St. Martin, St. Thomas. So that would be almost like what they would do to visit like a lot of the family all in 1 week. But that I think they went to like almost one cruise at least every single year since they were like 5 or 6 years old.
Okay. I mean, yeah. It works. And then you also have time frames. You're like, sorry, we only have 10 hours and we have to go.
Yeah. Well, and then now they have like that status and everything. And because I'm with my husband, I have status only if I go with him. So
you're like, honey, definitely been. Come with me.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
So for the is it Royal Caribbean is the line you use for that?
Carnival. Yeah. But we want to find another cruise line because I want to travel more, like to go to Europe. We've been to the Caribbean already a lot of times where I was like, oh, I want to go one more like Europe and even Australia or, you know, like or on China or something. I've heard that there's other really cool cruise lines.
Yeah. Well, my dad also, he talks about there's like river cruises too. And like the middle, like in Norway, and there's an Irish one.
I have not heard of that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. It's the same thing as like going to sea. It's usually a week long and they just go through this river. This guy he follows, like not Gary Vaynerchuk. I forgot his last name. Yeah, and he's gone on stuff. This Gary guy has gone to like Antarctica.
Oh.
Okay. Right? I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Very few people can say, I've been to Antarctica.
Yeah, serious.
But yeah, this Gary guy was talking about how he went on these different river cruises. I was like, oh, now that's interesting kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never been on a river cruise, or especially one as cool as that one, Northway and Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then it was just one of those. I'm like, okay, we spent a lot on this cruise. So like, we've all told my dad no cruises this year. We spent way too much.
It is nice that you get to sample a few islands or different places all in one trip, and you don't have to go backpacking and lugging all your luggage.
True. Very true. Mm-hmm. So where are you stationed at?
I'm in Durham, North Carolina. So I just moved here about 9 months ago from Chicago, and I've only lived in Chicago. So this is my first time living somewhere else.
Wow. Going from Chicago to North Carolina, that's a bit different.
Yeah. Different pace of life. But I like it. I feel like in Chicago, it's always like hustle and bustle moving. I haven't really changed my itinerary, but for whatever reason, it just feels more calm. I feel less stressed. So that's really good. Plus, I don't mind 75 degree winters, which this past Christmas, it was 75 degrees here. So that was amazing.
Oh, shucks. Here in California, it's like Christmas is 90 degrees now.
Coming from Chicago, usually I'm like, oh, it's 3-4 feet of snow and it's -30 degrees. So I'll take 75 degrees.
Yeah. I can actually go outside with my cup of coffee and not freeze.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Is there any good restaurants up there?
There's a lot of good restaurants around here. I mean, there's like steak places, there's Southern food. like different types of varieties. Now, I would say it's not as much as I had in Chicago, but there's still a lot of really great places here with really great food.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Any particular ones you recommend if I'm up in that area?
There is like a crab leg place seafood is called, I think Snuffs or Shoves or something like that. I can't remember, but okay. It's really good.
Well, look for that.
The
Snuff place.
Or there's Lila's Southern place where they have like a Nashville hot chicken sandwich or like Southern style mac and cheese.
Nice.
That's also really good that I had the other day.
Ooh, definitely. I'm going to say the mac and cheese, that's a seller right there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say if it's Southern, do they also have tater tots over there?
Yeah, there's places here that have tater tots. They also have hush puppies. That's what's more.
That? Okay, I'm like, wait, what's that again?
Hush puppies. Now, I do not know what's in it, but you know it's really good and fried.
It's fried. Okay, that's all I need.
Yeah, it's like a bread-ish type fried. So it's really good.
Perfect. Then definitely going to, I'm like, sitting here, I've heard it, but what's a hush puppy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I said, there's not a lot of places that I've seen in the Midwest, usually when you go to Southern places, but here, I mean, it's mostly at a lot of the restaurants and it's really good.
Perfect. I'm running out of questions to ask. Let's just get right into it. Can you tell us a little about yourself and what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Claudia Miller and I'm a career coach and I work with women in tech and helping them land senior fulfilling leadership roles within the tech industry. So I'm a career coach for those career ambitious driven women, but I also partner with Fortune 500 companies and helping them move more women into senior leadership roles and having it go with their leadership talent pipeline. So I work both with Fortune 500 companies as well as individuals.
I'm just curious on the Fortune 500. Are you charging them for your services or more like a mutual? I wouldn't say if you're not charging them, they're not going to listen.
No, I'm definitely charging them. And some of them, you know, they have different reasons. Some of them have hired me because they like to move and promote internally, but they know that some of their employees don't know how to promote themselves. They don't know how to sell themselves. And we know that they have the capability, but we need to teach them how to have like that director presence and how to be able to convey and, you know, sell themselves. So I work with them one-on-one or they're looking to say like, hey, how can we empower some of our employees and primarily women and women of color within the company and for them to advocate for themselves. And that way we're able to notice them while we're building this leadership talent pipeline, since there is usually a 75% drop when it comes to women in leadership roles.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was talking to a HR fellow, but he was telling me the same thing. He's like, yeah, it's sad, but women they maybe get one promotion, but then he's like, as HR, I'm watching it. They just kind of fall off the cliff. So they definitely need someone like you to be like, okay, you got to speak up. You got to show this kind of thing. Oh, sorry. I ended it right there.
That's okay. Yeah, there's a research done by McKinsey. We're called Women in the Workplace, and the most recent is from 2021, where it says men and women both get hired at the same rate, but they get promoted differently. So for every 100 men that get promoted, 86 women get promoted. And as you move up the career ladder, that gap starts increasing, and then you see a 75% drop where you don't see a lot of women in those senior leadership roles.
So you were mentioning how you teach the clients, employees, how to advocate for themselves. What are some of the things that you show them? Like you're very talented in this, but you need to do X, Y, and Z kind of thing to help them see what's going on. What's the general gist of that?
Yeah, so it depends. Usually in Hispanic culture or African-American culture, we're taught to be humble and, you know, not to toot our own horn and, you know, just go, just do the work and eventually we get promoted. Now, we know that's not how things happen in corporate America.
No.
You really have to advocate for yourself. You need to create that mentorship. You want the promotion. You need to start having that conversation with your manager, sometimes with the HR person, understanding what does it take to get that promotion? Are there parameters in place, years of experience, education, some companies have more structure than others. So it's really identifying what kind of structure does your company have? Are there specific benchmarks that you need to check off in order to get promoted? And then it's really understanding, well, what are next steps for you? And they might say, I have no idea. I kind of just ended up in this industry. I'm in this role. I don't know what I want to do next. And it's then discovering, well, let's figure out, where do you thrive in? You know, are you more of a person that likes to grow and develop? So that's usually great for like something new, like a new line of service, going to a startup. Or are you more of a grower, meaning it's already set in place, but we want to expand this? Or are you more of a, let's maintain status quo, I know how to keep things, and then maybe I start optimizing things around, like within my department. So understanding which one of those three buckets you fall in, and then understanding, well, where do you want to take your career? Because that can depend whether you want to become a project manager versus a program manager. Those are different career paths, and one of them will get you faster to your end goal than the other. So it's really about understanding what is that end goal for you.
Perfect. Yeah, that was one thing I was chatting with someone about, and I was just like, yeah, if you don't have a goal in mind, then you're just going to be aimlessly shooting in the dark. It was a fellow coworker at the current job I'm at, and he wants to promote and be a manager. I said, well, then this is just applies to everyone. You need to get records of people that are actually going to remember what you do, so you can have them get called later on and be like, oh yeah, because a lot of his coworkers don't remember anything. They're going to be like, he did what? When? Where? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I said, but that's what I told him, like, get a list of people that would advocate for you. Go above and beyond, but make sure the manager knows. Otherwise, if you tell no one, did you even do it? Kind of thing.
Exactly. Well, a lot of us don't even remember what we did 2 weeks ago. I don't even know what I did 2 weeks ago, so I have to look at my calendar. Now, imagine your manager, they're going to learn or remember everything you've done these past 12 months. So having like that list of achievements too is really helpful to say like, hey, in this past 12 months, here's what I've done, A, B, and C, and D. And that goes along with what the company's looking to achieve and what was that part of their business goals. And now I'm looking to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, have your support, or what do I need in order to be moved into this next role? Or do I need a compensation and title adjustment that kind of embodies more of what I'm doing now than what I was hired for?
That's exactly what I told him. I said, you may not get an instant promotion, be like, okay, I've done this. I'm like, I said, sounds silly. Have a notepad, write what you do, date and time. He said, our security system's amazing, so they'll just type in the date and time and find what you did. And I said, yeah, but you got to have a list, otherwise. And then he wants to be some big head honcho. And I'm like, that's great, but be small. Say, maybe I can't get this, but can I move horse laterally? Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, is it horizontal or laterally? Mm-hmm. Here, and then I grow up, kind of thing. I said, so it might take you an extra 5 years, but you will be eventually promoted.
Yeah. And sometimes, like you mentioned, it is part of the strategy where I have clients where they want to be in more in a global role, but they've only done domestic work. So they will take a lateral move to be exposed more of like international markets to then acquire the skill set and knowledge and relationships in order to move then into a global role where they can see both domestic and international markets.
Are we talking global, like a president, CEO, or more like
Global operations? So like I have clients that are in operations, logistics management, maybe marketing, product strategy. So understanding like, oh, products. One client I had was really interesting where they created product strategy for refrigerators. So how we have refrigerators here in the US is very different how they will be in Brazil, just because they utilize it very different. So even just the offerings, like, for example, I think mentioned that in Brazil, they have a lot of water bottles because they don't have really good filtration water systems. So a lot of their fridges are.
We're going to take a quick break right there. Claudia lost connection with the Zoom call, and she's going to be right back in a second. I just wanted to insert here real quick that I am working hard on learning how to post on YouTube, grow this show and marketing. I could really use some help because I don't get feedback, really never have. So if you like what I'm doing, please subscribe to my channel. Well, subscribe to this on whatever platform you're listening to. And if you have any guests or content ideas you would like me to go chat with someone about, best place to hit me up is my website. There's a little contact me tab and you can literally just send me a message. I check them like once a week. Cause I don't really get that much. And, yeah, you could just say, oh, hey, so-and-so would be great. Just any feedback, critiques would be greatly appreciated. And, I am gonna just hand it right back to Claudia now, because it looks like the time is up. There she is. I was like, I'm about to shoot her a text.
Sorry about that.
I'm like, oh shit. I lost you at water bottles in the fridge.
Yes. So how the configurations in refrigerators in Brazil or in other parts of the world is very different of like how we have it in the U.S. In Brazil, they don't have a lot of water filtration systems, or in South America. So refrigerators there, I built in with like a compact where you put in water bottles and then that's where they keep them cold. Whereas here, it wouldn't be common. So yeah, just looking at products, the person oversees product strategy for this specific company and was in charge, but they had to know of like how to do research, customer segmentation, and how their items were used. So it took a lateral move. And then now oversees the global product strategy for this company.
That's interesting. Yeah, when I was in Europe that we were chatting about earlier, everyone was just handing us water bottles. And I'm like, is this just because the water's not good? And they're like, oh, no, it's just what we do. Yeah, the water's fine. You can drink it if you want. I'm like, okay. So I kind of like one of those, I actually filled up my water bottle with tap water. I'm sipping it. I'm like, I don't get it. Why are we handing out water bottles kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And here we're we try to be a little bit more self-conscious. We're like, no, don't use water bottles or use those refillable water bottles that you can just take anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But different cultures. Yeah. Different ways how we use things.
But the interesting part was they were handing everything at glass bottles. And I was like, it was super fancy and expensive too. But, Venice has a really good recycling system. So they're like, oh yeah, like everything's utilized here. So they just kind of threw in the trash, a little boat full comes up, picks it up and drives away.
Okay.
I was like, oh, all right. But yeah, I would see now for the strategizing the global, like you would have to know, oh, in this region of Europe, they do this in this part of whatever. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you would need very specific skills. It doesn't matter who you are. You would need to learn that before you go horizontal.
Exactly.
Hopefully our internet doesn't cut out again, but I have those questions I was talking about earlier with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to phrase this without seeming choppy, but she asked me, how can we as a society move from treating women differently when it comes to being disagreeable?
That is more of a broader aspect than just in the career place.
Right.
But how, you know, one of the things that I teach my clients is understanding one, the culture. Is this a culture that's going to allow you to thrive in, or is this going to be a toxic workplace that's going to hinder you? Now, right, if we have signs of obviously like discrimination, and then I have clients where they've been at their company for like 15, 20 years. And for example, one of my clients actually got finally promoted to a manager position to then find out that her direct reports were getting at least $50,000 more than her. So they were getting paid more than the manager. And it took her, she had to do the role for 3 years. And it's all these other things that you got to start looking into place. Is this even the right workplace for me? Will I even be allowed to succeed in this place? And if it's toxic, well, then it's time for me to find a company that's going to allow me to succeed, allow me to thrive, and allow me to continue moving up the career ladder. So one is understanding, is it maybe you need to do a better job of conveying it? Or two, is this more of a broader workplace issue and you just need to change companies? Now, if it's like a like specific people that are trying to put you down, or they might have discriminatory, you know, actions or being microaggressions, well, then that can be something that maybe you can deal on a case by case basis. And usually like this is a something depending on your personality too, I would have to say needs to be taken into account. But, you know, when you're dealing with this, it's really to come and not attack it, because that sounds very combative, But it would be like, if you were to kind of cut me off, let's just say, and I would say like, Josh, I apologize, but I'm actually continue talking with, I'll let you know when I'm done speaking. Unless there is something that you want to convey afterwards, I'll allow you to speak afterwards. But it's really bringing it up to light and then understanding that if that person is going to be offended, that person is going to be offended whether you say something or not. So it's making sure that you don't take things personal. Now, if it's a superior, well, then again, we need to have that analysis. Do I want to stay here? Would this person allow me to thrive? Or are they going to hinder? For me, my philosophy is if you won't promote me, I'll promote myself and I'll go to another company and get paid more and I'll be given the opportunity and allowed to continue to thrive in. I'm not going to stay in this company just because I've already been here and I've already dedicated time. Like, I am loyal to myself. So I'm going to go to the best place that will allow me to succeed.
Very elegantly handled. That's probably what she was aiming for. Yeah, I agree. And like, for me, this current job, I look at it as more of a means to an end. It's not my be all end all, because the whole company does not intend to promote me, but this is a whole different thing. And, but yeah, that's where I was telling, I talked to a lot of people, but someone I was telling him said, if you want to go to a good place, I said, how you can tell, I said, yeah, there's always a glass door route in that, but that's usually just people who are hurt post there kind of thing, unless the boss is like, hey, can you put a good review if you like me kind of thing. I told him, I said, give a place like 3 months. They'll really show their fangs after 3 months. If it doesn't feel good, just leave. I would say, especially right now, job market is super, there's not enough employees for the jobs. You could just be like, I want to go over here, and they'll hire you.
One of the strategies I have my clients use, because I mean, just applying to jobs and interviewing, it is very time extensive. It takes a lot of time. It's very draining. You have to prepare, do all of this work. So one of the strategies I have my clients do is actually reach out to previous employees that used to work at that company. They're more likely to be more honest. Hey, I saw Josh that used to work at this company. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about culture? And primarily if you're a woman or a woman of color and you want to know what the culture is for a woman or woman of color, well, reach out to previous employees and that way you can get a better overview. Don't ask this during the interview question of like, what is culture like here? Because they're not going to be honest. They're not going to say, we're very toxic and we're going to expect you to work, you know, after hours. And I'm going to be texting you on the weekends and I expect an answer immediately. They're never going to be that honest. So there's no point of even asking that question. It's like talking to a wall. So instead, we want to reach out to previous employees. They'll be more likely to be honest. And you want to reach out to 3 to 5 people because you might reach out to that one person that maybe was a horrible employee and they got let go and they deserve to be let go. But after 3 or 4, you start seeing, is this a trend or is this an outlier? And that will give you a better understanding before investing all that time interviewing, researching, and going through that process.
So would you recommend then building out your LinkedIn profile and building connections to the places you want to go? And then
reach out to them? Oh, definitely. Okay. Yes. Definitely build out your LinkedIn profile. I was reading a stat that on average, around 86% of recruiters will look at your LinkedIn profile to decide whether you're getting an interview or not. So that is just part of the process. So make sure you have an optimized LinkedIn profile that speaks to the role you want, not the role you have.
Good. That's funny. I actually had a guy come on. He teaches people how to get into Salesforce. And that's what he was saying. He's like, we were off air and he was telling me, like, he was giving me a special and all that. He said, but Josh, I looked up your LinkedIn profile. You don't have much going on. And I'm like, I don't like social media in general. He's like, and he said it so bluntly and now I'm readjusting. He's like, if you want a job anymore, you have to at least use something. Otherwise, they're going to think you're some robot and then they're never going to hire you.
It's part of their hire, 86%. And not having a LinkedIn picture, having a LinkedIn picture is 14 times more likely for your LinkedIn profile to be seen. Meaning, if I don't see a LinkedIn profile, I'm not even going to bother looking at your LinkedIn profile. And I'm just going to toss off your resume. So you want to make sure you have a really good LinkedIn profile picture. You want to make sure your LinkedIn profile is optimized because now your LinkedIn profile is almost like your resume. And that's for people that already have your resume. They're looking at their LinkedIn profile. Now, I have my clients optimize their LinkedIn profile that recruiters come to them for job opportunities. I had a client where Google reached out to them saying, hey, we really like your background and experience. We have this manager of data science available. Would you be interested in interviewing? And by the way, this job pays around, you know, $240,000 to $300,000 mm-hmm. plus stock and bonus on top of that. But again, you got to make sure you have an optimized LinkedIn profile to be able to have those types of opportunities in your inbox without even having to apply and going through that process. They reached out to her.
So then what would be some of the steps you'd give your clients to start that? Let's say 58-year-old woman, just recently unemployed, hasn't really used LinkedIn. What would be some of the steps, tips or tricks you'd say to start optimizing and get it there?
Well, based on that scenario, one, I would not have them change their position, because usually what people tend to do is when they get laid off or they're currently unemployed, they'll put that their end date at their company. Then they'll start a new company saying open to work. And that becomes almost like they're under their experience. So do not do that, because when recruiters are looking for talent, let's just say they're looking for a project manager, they'll search project manager. LinkedIn algorithm has it where the search, what they start to look at is typically like your headline and then your most current title. So if you have open to work, they're not going to see your profile because they see open to work and not project manager. So that would be
okay.
The first step of what not to do. Make sure you have a good LinkedIn profile, your tagline. And that's usually you have like your picture and under it will say like your name and then a tagline. Make sure that it's not project manager at Acme Company, because that's usually the default on LinkedIn. Instead, it could be project manager with 20 plus years of experience within the financial and technology markets with companies up to $50 billion in annual revenue. That's
very, very specific.
Capture their attention. And I'm going to say, oh, let me read more about them. We are looking for a project manager. We're in the finance industry and we're a big company, or we're continuing to grow that we are going to get to that level. So we want someone that can grow with the company. That's very different than project manager at Acme Company.
Yeah. So, it's that you and everyone else has done project management.
Yeah. It doesn't stand out. When I search project manager, just look at the LinkedIn profiles. It's project manager at X, project manager at X, project manager at X. And then all of a sudden you see this person's profile with, they worked at finance, 15 years of experience, and they worked at, you know, $50 billion company. That's going to capture that my attention.
Definitely.
And the third thing would be like to audit your LinkedIn. So a quick way to audit is if you go to your profile, there's an analytics section and it says, I think it, it's called search. And if you click on it, it says what keywords that people look for and that your profile showed up. So let's just say you are a marketing manager and you, when you search on it, you kept coming up as marketing coordinator. Well, then that means I have too much coordinator in my resume or in my LinkedIn profile that now that's what I'm being searched for. No wonder I'm only getting approached for marketing coordinator roles. I want a senior marketing manager role. So I need to beef up that LinkedIn profile to make sure I embody more of those leadership skills and I can portray myself as a leader, not just a manager or a coordinator. Were you able to?
Yeah, no, I'm looking it up as we speak. I'm like, wait a minute, because I haven't used my LinkedIn profile in a long time. So like what I was after the cruise, I'm like, I'm going to update everything. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of coaching and consulting on the side, more just to help people. Like I have a lazy, she's like, it's almost every time she comes on, she books another episode. I'm like, go for it. But I've been helping her optimize her coaching and business coaching and all that. And it was just one of those, she's like, how long have you been doing this? I'm like, 2000 and what? Like I mean it's off and on. Do I count every client? I don't know. She's like, well, since you've been coaching since 2001, I would just put that on your LinkedIn profile. I'm like, well, thanks, coach, I'll do that.
Yeah, I do this for myself too. Like I want to make sure that when people are looking for a career coach, career development, that they see my profile. So I even have mine optimized for that specific search. So a big mistake I see people is they'll say like, oh, I'm a marketing manager. So I'm going to portray myself as a manager, but I want to go and finally land that director role. Why won't they see me or get a push for director roles? Well, it's because you're not portraying yourself as a director. You're calling yourself a marketing manager. Yes, that's your title, But if you want a direct role, then I would switch it to a marketing leader, you know, or marketing leader with a background in leadership development, or it could be something specific that they're looking for at a high level strategy work, as opposed to saying like, I'm very good at managing social media platforms. That's not a director responsibility. I would focus more on strategy and development, go to market, or driving a robust pipeline across global markets and products.
Man, I'm just getting so much out of this alone. Because like I said, I was chatting with that one guy and he was saying use LinkedIn, but he kind of just glosses over it. I'm like, wow, am I supposed to do this?
I have clients that once you have an optimized LinkedIn profile, they can generate 3 interviews in 3 days. Like it's a lot faster than applying to job boards.
I would say I did the job board thing for my current job. And it was like, I have crazy stories, but one of them, a guy actually was begging me to come to an interview. I said, okay, I booked, it was during Corona. So I show up to the Zoom call. I was like, I've never done these Zoom interviews before, so I'll just do it to do it. He didn't show. He ghosted me, even though he just begged me to come on. And then the next day he was cussing me out for not showing up. I'm like, I'm glad I'm not getting hired by you.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I would caution too, is there's been a lot of scammers that pose themselves as recruiters, because in your resume, people tend to have their name, phone number, and address. And please do not, for all your listeners, whoever, do not put your home address on your resume. It's no longer needed. And right now it's a security risk. Mm-hmm. So even when you have recruiters reaching out to you on LinkedIn, go to their LinkedIn profile and make sure they have at least activity for 3+ years. And the reason I say 3+ years is because this started increasing even more since COVID. Mm-hmm. So since 2020, they've created fake profiles and started scamming people out of their personal information. So it's been now about 2 years. So I would even go before then. And even then, I would still go back at 5-6 years and then see, like, do they have activity? How many people are they connected with? And then based on that, I would dictate whether I can trust them enough to even give them that type of personal information.
Oh, yeah. And that was a big one for me. That was before COVID. One of my exes was like, she was reviewing my, because she used to do management. So she's like, oh, let me look over your resume. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you don't need an address anymore. But like, if we really want to know, we'll ask you like the second interview. I was like, oh, I thought it was just standard issues. She's like you said, just phone number and email.
That's LinkedIn URL. You could put your LinkedIn URL so that way they can continue seeing more stuff, because you don't want to give them everything in your resume. But in LinkedIn, if they want more information, they can find it there.
Of course. Well, now I'm sitting here going like, I need a pad and a paper, but there's nothing nearby. So then there's all that. Let's say now the 59-year-old woman has optimized everything. She's getting interviews. Is there any interview tips or tricks you'd tell your clients to do?
Yes. Make sure that you don't prepare for an interview once you have an interview already set in place. Meaning, obviously, biggest mistake people have is, oh, I just got an interview for this Tuesday. I'm going to start preparing for my interview now. Instead, I have my clients prepare for interviews before they even start applying to jobs or networking, because that helps refine our skills at a more adjustable time frame, as opposed to be like under the gun and now we're, you know, freaking out because we have a few days to prepare. Instead, my clients prepare for about a week or two. We make sure that their interviewing skills is impeccable. Like my clients have been told is, your skills are unmatched. No one even comes close to it. And I even have companies, clients actually review companies' earnings call. So like I said, we filter, make sure that one, we go after the right companies. If it's, we see that they're not financially stable, we anticipate they're going to be laying off soon. We don't even go after those companies. Only companies that we know are financially healthy.
I'm just curious real quick. Mm-hmm. How do you find that information? Are we going for public companies? Because like you can't get the mom and pop private info like that.
There's different ways that you can find whether a company is financially healthy and stable. Now, it's easier when it's public companies. Now, when it's like startups and mid-sized companies, we have to do a little bit more work. But when I mean more work is 10 minutes versus 15 minutes. But okay. There's ways that you can have a pulse to say like, hey, I think this company is really stable. Whereas I don't trust this company from what I see the writing on the wall. I'm going to parking lot this company and I'm just going to focus my efforts on these other ones where I know they're thriving and doing really well.
Okay. I'm just curious. Continue with the other part.
So once we've identified those right companies, then I prep my clients. So they get a mock interview session with me. So we role play as if it's a real interview. We already know what questions they're going to be asking. So we start preparing. And then what's going to make them stand out from the competition? What are the hardest skills to hire for? Where are their biggest pain points and what are they trying to achieve? And that's what we focus on. We don't, my clients don't ask, you know, tell me a little bit more about the culture. Can you tell me what the day-to-day looks like? Instead, my clients are prepared where they can say, by the way, Josh, I saw that Acme company is looking to release a new product at the end of the fiscal year. And it's primarily for this customer segmentation of between the ages of 30 to 35. What are some of the strategies you currently have in place in order to do the go-to-market? And are you going to leverage your other customers and other segmentations in order to be able to fill and drive this pipeline?
Is that what I'm asking them?
Yeah, that's what you're asking them. So you're coming in as the expert and they might say, we haven't even thought about that. Or we know that there's a market, but we don't have any strategies. So let's just say if I'm in marketing. You know, from my experience, I've worked with the 25 to 35 customer segmentation. And one of the best practices that we've seen and that's been the most profitable is A, B, and C. So now I'm set up as the expert. I've opened up and kind of brought up a challenge that they may not have even thought about or know that they have. And I'm the one that has a solution. And I'm telling you how well it performed in my other previous roles.
That's impressive.
At a whole nother level. So it's, you see, like it takes time. And, but it takes time. It takes about 1 or 2 weeks, but once the interviews come in, my clients are already prepared. Like, oh, I have this interview coming up. I've already prepared. I know what to say. I'm not going to wing it. I'm not going to figure out what to say once I'm there. I know exactly what to say and then what to bring up that I know is going to put me at a whole nother level that other candidates, they don't even have the time to get to this level. Because it does take 2 weeks and usually you don't have 2 weeks to prepare for an interview.
Yeah. I was going to say, if someone came at me with like that, my only thought is thinking as the person being interviewed is like, was I being too intimidating? And even though I was qualified, the interviewer was scared and like, I don't like this person.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it depends like, yeah, the style. But yeah, it's mostly like, oh yeah, that's exactly what we thought about. And we, what I hear from like, the interview, like the person interview is like, oh my God, I'm so glad that you brought that. No one even brought that up. That's actually one of our challenges. We're looking to hire to fill in that skills and knowledge gap. And here's what we have planned. And we want this person to help us continue developing this strategy.
Genius. This is why you're the coach for this. I'm like, because I've never thought about turning the interview on you as an interview to them kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's more of like, almost coming in as a consultant, meaning like, hey, I'm here to help you solve your problems. Based on what I've seen is you're looking to do X, Y, and Z, and I can help you with this. But have you already started considering what's going to happen with A, B, and C? From my experience, that's what typically tends to happen. Oh, we didn't know we had to think about that. Okay. You know, that's very common. And usually like there's different types of practices or different types of solutions. It all depends on the resources and objectives. So now you're coming as a consultant, as opposed to like, oh, you know, I'm just here like, hey, you know, can you tell me what the day-to-day looks like? I mean, everyone asks those questions and it's like people just start blending in after interviewing so many people, but that person, like this person did their research. They actually brought up points that we didn't even think about. And we don't even have answers to that. But if we hire this person, they're going to be able to help us. And they have that expertise.
Yeah. Then that's the biggest one. A lot of the entrepreneurs I've chatted with on the show, they're like, one of them jokingly told me like his screening process. Cause he was telling me like, oh, I'm hiring for an assistant. Well, you like, you want someone that's attention to detail, routine, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. And he said, like, his thing is he'll randomly input in his job posting. If you really want the job, print out your favorite picture of a cat. Color is bonus points, but not necessary. And so he has all these people show up and he's told me like the same thing. The ones that showed up with the cat picture, he's like, I had to make it interesting.
I had to filter them out. Yeah.
And he's like, they still brought the resume, even though I told him not to. And he's like, usually those ones were the ones that asked the hard hitting questions. He's like, I actually hired two people, even though I needed one, because they were just too valuable and I couldn't let them go.
Yeah.
And I was just laughing. I'm like, so what did you do? He's like, I just told the accountant, figure it out. If you have to cut my pay, cut my pay. I can't let these two leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you have good talent, like I've had clients been told like, oh, we can, you know, the salary range for this role is like 140. And afterwards they offer them a salary of 150 with like a $10,000 sign-on bonus because they really wanted them. Or they'll say, this is usually a 4-part interview process, but we really want you. We know you're interviewing. So we're going to cut the last interview. We're going to send over the offer today.
Those are always the best. Cause then you're like, I know I have the job kind of thing.
Yeah.
So then we went through the LinkedIn optimizing, the questioning on the interview. Then I guess what would be the next steps that you would help your clients with in, I guess, transitioning into the role?
Yeah. Well, transitioning, I always like to say, like, I consider myself very resourceful, and I've been able to land jobs when I only have maybe 20-30% of the experience of what the job posting said, but I still got 30K salary increases and I got the job and I was successful at it. And how I like to say is, like, you can become an expert at anything. So the first 90 days, I have my clients, especially if it's something new that they've never done, and I know that they're feeling a little bit like imposter syndrome, or they're not feeling as confident because this may be their first director job or their first manager job, I have them reach out to other managers or people who have been in that position for 3 to 5 years. So they're ahead of you at a similar type of industry, and connect with them and really ask them, you know, what has been some of the biggest challenges, you know, that you've had in this role? What have been some of your biggest achievements and successes? You know, what are you seeing, some things that are very common or low hanging fruit that you're able to solve? Have them give you the answers to everything. And then now you have a good template on how to get started and be successful in your role. You don't need to spend 3 to 5 years to figure this out. You just had someone tell you. So then you can say, let me start with the low hanging fruit. Oh, I realized there's A, B, and C. So how this person addressed it, this is how they were to solve it. And then you implement, and then you continue improving it. And again, you're almost implementing all best practices. And the more people you connect with and find as mentors, the faster you get results. And that way you don't have to figure it out. You already, people told you how to figure it out and what to focus on and what the biggest challenges are. And then you can start that in mind, and you have 2-3 years to figure out and solve some of those biggest challenges.
Well, that's actually a very good point. And one of my guests was telling me, he's like, so like, what's your point of your show? And I'm like, oh, I just want to, it's easy to talk to business people about business. It's a very easy pitch to get people to come on. And then we were talking about something. He had a chart company. It was really interesting. He could take the data, natural, not creepy data, like how fast you walk, you dis, your performance, your driving, and he can make a chart telling you, oh, this one says he's having a pretty shitty day, or she is having trouble at home because this dynamic is down, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so then we got talking about whatever, and he pretty much said, he's like, I know what you're using your podcast for. And he's like, damn, I wish I started this a while ago. And I'm like, boy, he's like, you're talking to successful people like me, so you don't have to go through all the problems. And then whenever you start a business, you've already heard the war stories. You're like, I just won't do that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, genius. So that's when you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, just get back on LinkedIn, type in whatever, and then be like, hey, I'd like to chat. If they're local, be like, I'll buy you a cup of coffee and a lunch if you just like show up for an hour, kind of thing.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, honestly, you can use that. I use that for my business as well. But I mean, for careers, you could do that. I literally, like I said, I'll be candidates that have years of experience. I'm like, oh, I qualified 30% of the job posting, but here's how I could deliver, because I knew how to prepare. I knew what were their biggest challenges, and I knew how to solve them, because other people that did that role in other companies told me how to solve their problems. And then I just came in already with a plan. I didn't have to figure it out. I didn't have to make all these mistakes. I just implemented best practices. And then you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Oh, no, you don't. It's amusing to me, because my current job, a lot of the managers have been coming to me for advice and consultations, and they had a huge morale problem. So I told them, like, this is what I've learned. This is the implementations, kind of the simple, kind gestures. And like the more, the, everything skyrocketed. And I then one of them like sheepishly came over and was like, I have a problem with this. I'm like, you're asking for you. That'll be $300. But they all told me, they're like, dude, your knowledge is so good. I'm like, I just ask people, what did you do? We're humans. If you ask a question, mm-hmm. it's not too evasive. They'll just give you an answer.
Yeah. People. And then there's books too. There's like, you have this podcast. I mean, there's blogs out there. There's so much wealth of information out there that one, you got to pick one that'll help you stay focused and doesn't overwhelm you. But the answers are out there. It's just whether one, you want to go look for it. And two, if you want to execute on it.
That is, yeah, those are the hard hitting questions. Because a lot of people want it, but they're not willing to execute on it.
My favorite motto is do what others won't to achieve what others can't.
I love it. I'm stealing that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I was listening to, it was a while ago on like YouTube, they did those motivational montage things. Mm-hmm. And one of them, I think it was Denzel Washington, was saying, he's like, if you want an easy life, you have to work hard. But if you want a hard life, just take the easy easy route or something like that. So he's like, so if you want the easy life, like work hard. I'm repeating myself. Never mind.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know what you mean. I love it.
And it was just one of those, I just sat there and that's always like stuck in my head. It was like a constant tapeworm. And then one of the days is why there's a whole story about why I started the show. But one of the guys was taking the easy route and he's like, why is my life so hard? And I just recited back to him and he's like, that sounds painful. Never mind. I'll just continue what I'm doing. But yeah,
we're used to comfort. Even if it's unpleasant, we like comfort. But even like, that's a strategy I use in careers. What do most people do when they job search? I just talked about it. They don't update their LinkedIn profile, or they don't update their resume. They don't optimize it. They prepare for the interview. Once they're at the interview, maybe they spend a few minutes reviewing a company's website, maybe looking at the person's LinkedIn profile, and that's it. So they do what others won't. So we know that they're not going to review earnings call. We know that they're not going to prepare 2-3 weeks perfecting their interviewing skills and making sure that they can outbeat the competition, even against people who have years of experience. We know they're not willing to do that. That's where our advantage comes from.
Oh, absolutely. From like the wealth of people I've chatted with, that's the one they've all said to, like, you may have little to no experience, but if you have the knowledge and the way to present it correctly, all of them will like have told me, like, we'll hire you. You'll beat the 20-year experience guy. If you know how to fix it, done. You're in. Yeah. And that's pretty much what you're saying too. It's like, as long as you have a plan, you know the structure of the company, where the weak points are, and you can help them, why would they hire the 20-year guy, which he might actually make things worse?
Yeah. And then now with like LinkedIn and everything, you can build networks and create them really quickly and get a lot of like intel insight that with people with 15, 20 years of experience, and then implement it as, you know, maybe as your first, second, or third year in the industry or that type of role.
Absolutely. Is there anything specific you want to go over that I must have missed?
One of the things that I have seen is there are systems like kind of being careful of not being careful, but like there are some systems within companies that do tend to hinder professional growth, especially depending on your personality. And it could be like the one I talked about. If you're a person of color, usually like Latin heritage or African American, we are told not to toot our own horn, to kind of put really just dive ourselves into the work, and eventually we get promoted. But there are some company systems now where they have it where you have to like almost like raise your hand to say like, hey, I'm ready for that promotion. And I think that those type of systems are very hindering to a lot of professionals. Like I said, women of color. And if you're an introvert, because if you're an introvert, you're probably not going to be like, hey, yeah, I think I'm ready for that promotion. Instead, they wait for like the manager to tell them they're ready for a promotion. And ideally, at a good timing, not 5-10 years once they've already been in that role and way have been way already ready for that promotion years ago. So really keeping an eye out for that. So if you feel like, hey, that's me, that's kind of like how it is in my company, and I am an introvert, or yes, I am not good at selling myself or tooting my own horn or raising my hand. Well, one, either like if you're like, hey, I don't want to work with anyone, maybe I don't want to hire a career coach, well, then maybe just change companies to make sure that that's not the system of how to get promoted, because you're not going to get anywhere because you're not doing anything. But if you know that that's the type of system you have in the workplace, and you're like, hey, maybe I do want to work with someone, and that's when you want to work with and hire a career coach to help you like sell yourself, how to brand yourself, how to identify the next role, and how long you should be in that role to even ask for that promotion. And a good rule of thumb is, if you're an individual contributor, I like to exclude sales because sales is a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a whole animal in of itself.
Yeah. So aside from sales, but for the most part, if you're an individual contributor, I recommend 2 to 3 years in that role. Once you've been in that role for 2 to 3 years, it's time for a new job. So whether it's a promotion or it's a lateral move to really start building your arsenal of skills, because afterwards you start stagnating and then you start losing that competitive advantage. Now, if you're a manager or supervisor, usually it's between 3 to 5 years. And then if you're a director, senior director, the average is around 5 years. And then if you're an executive, it's anywhere between 7 to 10 years. So if you feel like, hey, I've actually done that role for more than years that you just mentioned, well, then you're already ready for that promotion. And the longer you stay in that role without that upward mobility, the more you start losing your competitive advantage, then that's going to make it hard for you to go into the workplace. And also you tend to not get as many salary increases as you would have out somewhere else. Because 8 to 10, if a company has like, hey, you only get 8-10% salary increases, well, if you go elsewhere, you can get a 30-40% salary increase.
So what's a realistic salary increase you would recommend for all clientele, not just essentially, what would be a realistic, like 10% a year? What would be a good, healthy growth you would recommend to your clients?
There's no actual number. It's whatever the marketplace is paying. Because I've had I have clients double their income. I had a client get a $140,000 salary increase. And that's because that's what the market is paying. So a good analogy I like to use is almost like house, like buying a house. Let's just say, Josh, you bought a house for $100,000 3 years ago. This is an example, clearly.
Right.
And now you're ready to sell. And I'm ready to offer you $300,000 for that house. Are you going to tell me, no, Claudia, there's no way I can accept your $300,000? I only bought it for $100,000. So maybe I'll sell it to you for $120,000. How does that sound? You're probably not going to do that. If you're a sane person, there's no way you're going to do that. So I tell all career professionals, stop basing your next salary based on how much you're making. It actually has nothing to do with how much your next salary needs to be. So let's just say you're a marketing manager and you're making $100,000. Well, then you're not going to say, well, as a senior marketing manager, maybe I should ask for 120. I mean, I'm making 100, or maybe 110. Maybe I should ask for 110. That is the biggest mistake. Because instead, we want to charge what the market is paying. Oh, I realize that technology companies for a senior marketing manager role are willing to pay 150. Well, then I want the 150 plus a 20% bonus on top. And if it's a public company, I want some RSUs in it or some equity. I don't care that it's $50,000 more than what I was already making. That's what the market is paying. So that's what I'm going to be asking for. That's how much the skills are valued at this time in this marketplace. So I tell my clients, we're going to ask what the market is paying. I don't care how much you're making now, because that has nothing to do with what we're going to be asking for in this next role. So that's like a really good analogy of, do not base your next salary by how much you're making. Instead, how much our company is willing to pay, that's the salary I want.
That's good. I heard it differently, where it's like, if you want to raise, but you don't want to be confrontational, look it up like on LinkedIn or whatever job sites and take notes of like the top 10 companies. And then present to your manager being like, I would like a raise in the medium of whatever. This is what people of my skill level have. And if they deny it, then it's just like, okay, I'm just going to go apply over there. You're going to lose me because you wouldn't give me the extra whatever. And he's like, usually that works, or they might call your bluff. But 9 times out of 10, they'll just give it to you instead, because they can't afford to lose you.
Yeah. Another thing I can recommend is Colorado has a law where they have to disclose their salary. So obviously you have to take into the cost of living. Austin, I think, is a pretty high cost of living, similar to Colorado. Now, if you're in someplace else where it's not that cost of living, you kind of have to take that into account. But if you already know that they have to disclose salaries, and let's just say you want to go after a company like Salesforce. Well, then Salesforce, let's look at job positions they're hiring. And that job title I want to go after in Colorado, just so I can see what the salary range is that they're willing to pay for this role in this marketplace. And let's just say if I'm already in Austin or a very high cost of living, well, I already know what the salary range is and what I'm going to be asking for. And it could be like when you're applying to new jobs and they're asking for your salary. Now you know the budget. You already know they're hiring at this in Colorado and they already disclosed that salary. So that's a good way to base it off. And if you're internally, you can say, I would like to discuss a compensation adjustment and a title adjustment as well. Instead of saying I need a raise, it's just a title adjustment and a compensation adjustment.
So much better. Yeah, I'm sitting here going like, that's not going to work. Even if I was a business or manager and you approached me, I'm like, okay, kind of rude.
But you have to highlight too, like, hey, I know I was hired for this role. Since then, my role and responsibilities have evolved, and now it's more in line with the senior marketing manager roles. So I would like to discuss a compensation and title adjustment to match my responsibilities that I currently have in place.
No, I'm just curious. This just applies to everyone. What if they said, we can't afford that? We'll give you the title, but we cannot afford that. But it is a good company. What would you tell your client then?
I'm sure we both can come to a number we both agree on.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Let's start looking at options, because yeah, maybe they won't be able to give you the base, but I've had clients where they're like, hey, we can't meet you at the base, but what about we give you a 25% bonus based on performance, and then we give you a $20,000 sign-on bonus, and how about we give you about $500 or 500 restricted stock units, which is worth right now at like $30 a share. Well, we still got to my number, it just looked a little bit differently. We sliced and diced it differently. If you pay me an extra $30,000 in pennies, I'll still take it to the bank. It's still $30,000.
Right. I'm just curious. I don't want to be rude. Do you need to get off right at one? Because I looked at my, holy cow, that went quick.
Yeah, time flies by. Sorry, I'm pulling up my calendar. I have a few more minutes. I have a call at 4:30 my time.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, probably like another 10 minutes or so.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I agree with the whole stock options or stock. It's like it all equals the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I've had clients where sometimes in stock, it's been worth over $100,000 that, all right, I get paid the same base, but now I got still like the bonus percentage, that's still an increase. And then the stock is worth around $100,000 and a quarter of it invest every year. So that could be, you know, an additional $25,000 a year. And then after that, invest every quarter or something.
Yeah. Well, when you get into like public companies where they just pay your stocks and options, oh, it's amazing how much you can make.
Oh, I love those companies. Cause I'm like, oh, this makes it so much fun to like, let's figure out this compensation plan that works best. And my clients are like, it's crazy. I get like a $25,000 check every quarter and I still get my bonus. Plus I still got my salary. So for me, I enjoy those the most because I know we can get a lot more and what that can mean to my clients and their lifestyle. Imagine getting an extra $25,000 check every quarter.
That would be fabulous. That's game changing, actually. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the whole strategy. You can like HELOC it, but well, not home equity, but like there's just similar strategy too, where you can take a loan on your stock.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't even have to use or exercise or sell that stock. You can just borrow against it and then you can leverage it. And then still, if hopefully the company's still going up in value, so that can still continues growing.
Yeah. Cause they're betting the banks or whoever's led it is betting it's going to go down. You're betting it's at least going to stay or go up. So mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. I'm just curious for you as the coach/consultant, do you take mostly cash payment or do you take equity now in the company too?
No, just credit card or debit, however they want to pay. Everything else, it's for them. So to give you an example, working with me is around like five figures So around anywhere between like $5,000 to $10,000. But the average my client gets is an average at least of a $30,000 salary increase. My highest has been 140. I had a client go from making 180 to 300,000 plus extra bonus and stock.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So then what's the average duration? Is it 5-10K a month or is it like for a quarter they get you?
They have me depending on what type of plan. So I have like the group coaching and then I have the elite. You get me at the elite VIP elite level, you get me for a year, but most of the time my clients get jobs within 3 to 6 months. Now, if it's like a CTO or CIO role, it might take us 6 to 9 months, but it wouldn't go. My goal is to get you a job as soon as possible. But if you go to the group coaching route for that one, you have 6 months support from me. And like I said, I ensure that you get a job within that time frame. So I only take on clients that I know I can help and will get a job and are going to get a salary increase.
Perfect. Yeah, I was going to say that I know a few coaches I've chatted with. I never signed up for the program, but they pretty much were like, oh, yeah, just pay us like 5K a month and we guarantee within whatever range you'll get your money back. And I'm like, you can't guarantee that.
Yeah, I don't guarantee when it comes to jobs because I'm like, if you pay me and you don't do anything, there's no way I can guarantee it. But I'm there to support you and guide you to make sure you get the job. Like I had a client who was job searching for 2 years, she was already in the C-suite. So she had an executive role, but couldn't land an executive role at another company. We started working together. Within 60 days, she already had a job offer. She's like, I can't believe it was that easy and quick. I wish I would have just hired you 2.5 years ago and I would have shortcut this way around. But again, it all depends. I work with clients that are like failure is not an option mentality. We ensure success. Like we are going to make sure we are going to get the results. And my thing is, if you follow the strategy and do the work, you will get the results. If you don't do the work, I can't guarantee your results. I can't interview for you. I can't network for you. So at the end of the day, they have to do that for themselves. But if they execute, they will get the results.
Perfect. That's awesome. Yeah. You definitely are like the go-to woman now when it comes to coach stuff, like switching. I just find it interesting that a C-suite had trouble getting another C-suite job.
They're not as many positions. And then two, they're not always posted on job boards. A lot of companies will not post a C-suite role. One, either because maybe that C-suite doesn't know that they're about to be replaced by someone else. Or two, it might create or diminish confidence in the marketplace by their competitors or just investors. So they don't want to say we're going to hire a new CTO. And they might say like, well, why? Or maybe it can impact the stock. And then maybe there's a partnership deal that's about to go through. And then they did it because of that CTO or the technology. And so there's just so many reasons why. So you only see a small portion of the job postings when it comes to the C-suite. And a lot of them you won't see and are unpublished. So you have to work with executive recruiters or you have to be able to start building that network because when those C-suite positions come up, they usually go to the board of directors or their C-suite to say, hey, do you have anyone in mind? If so, you know, let's bring them for a conversation to make sure that they might be the right fit. And that's when you get tapped in and say, hey, Josh, I know there's a position. I know you'd be great at it. Would you be interested? Would you consider, you know, being the CTO here at this company?
Cool.
It's a different game, different strategy.
I would say I'm sitting here thinking about it because there was one point I was trying to apply for some sort of C-suite job and I came to realize like, oh, it's a terrible idea to try to apply for a publicly posted, not publicly traded job. Like if indeed they're asking for a CEO, there's something clearly wrong with the company.
Well, some of them might be like they'll look for like CTO or CMO, like chief marketing officer, or chief technology, like a small or mid-sized companies. But even then still they might like startups have to worry about like their investors or people that are giving them VC funding, or it might be mid-sized companies that might still be publicly traded already. Or they're trying to work out a big partnership deal and they don't want anything that would, you know, make this partnership uneasy. So they tend to keep it quiet. Now, again, I wouldn't always say like, oh, don't apply to jobs that are C-suite positions on job boards because there's still good opportunities, but it's only a small fraction of all the roles and opportunities that are out there when it comes to this type of role.
Yeah. So then definitely the network, talk to other C-suites, this and that. Because like you said, you never know. One of them's like, oh, I know my buddy and whatever, he does steel mill, but if you're willing to do it, it might get you in as his whatever. Mm-hmm. But you would never know that unless like you had that connection.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Then we could keep chatting, but you have a client. I got three going out questions for you. Mm-hmm. So other than work, what have you been doing to keep yourself busy during these COVID times?
I'm always learning. I'm an avid learner. So okay. Like during COVID, I got like a marketing data analytics certification from MIT. It also nice. Helps me better help my clients. And I'm always interested in marketing. So like I said, I use a lot of business principles to help my clients in their career. So I'm always looking like, how can I increase my business? How can I grow and develop? And one of the things was like, hey, I want to get more on podcasts. So I started this last year. And I think today I've been in over 75 podcasts at this point.
Heck yeah.
So this is all new to me. I've gotten a little bit better during those 75 interviews. And the other thing I've done, I read a lot. So I just finished reading Atomic Habits. And then now I'm reading Great The Power book. Of Now. I Great love it. Book.
The one I'm reading is Stealing Fire.
What is it called?
Stealing Fire.
Oh.
Here, I'll
check that out.
It's how the Navy SEALs get into flow state.
Oh.
This is what it looks like. The glare won't get in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the glare is just going to be nasty.
Okay, Stealing Fire. Who's the author, by the way?
Stephen Clotter and James Wheel.
Oh, okay. I know there's a book called Unbeatable Mind, and he's also a Navy SEAL, and he actually trains people that want to apply to be in the Navy SEAL, and it's so rigorous. I think over 95% of the people don't ever make it. So he's the person you train with to then take the training and pass.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the guests I've interviewed, his name's William Brenham. He does the same thing now. He's stationed out of Hawaii, but they pay him whatever, and he gets them up to snuff, and pretty much saying, as long as you can just handle, if you can handle me, you can handle them, kind of thing.
But I'd rather just stay at home. That's right. Like, thank God for I'd people rather like just, that.
But we need people like them.
Though. Exactly. Thank God for them. And it's very rigorous and very hard, and props to them.
Oh yeah. The one book I read was Jocko Willems' Extreme Ownership. I can summarize it real quick. You don't have to go through that. He goes into the details of the war. And but essentially, it's like, if you do something, own it. Even if like your team members messed up, even though but you are the manager in charge. So if they mess up, you mess up, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially his whole principle, is just everything you do is your fault. Even if it's them, it's your fault. So figure out how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good book. It was a really good book. It was definitely one, like, if you are wanting to get up there, it is a good mindset to have, where your umbrella of team members, well, they are essentially me, so I must make sure they're succeeding. If they're not, I'm failing. Therefore, this and that kind of thing. But yeah. Second question. What are some tips, tricks, or advice you give someone that is inspired by you to start down a similar path?
Do things before you're even ready. So I always, like, a lot of the stuff, like I said, like I started a podcast, didn't even know how to do the podcast. I knew it was not going to be perfect, but I did it, and it's been getting better and better.
Nice.
I did a stand-up comedy class, and then I did a set for 5 minutes in front of people. I know I wasn't going to be great, but I did it. And again, that really has given me really great experiences, and even networks. Like, I reached out to my favorite authors. After I finished reading a book, I reach out to them. And sometimes they don't answer, and sometimes they do. But I think being bold and doing things even while you're scared is going to bring you a lot of success.
100%. Then where can everyone contact you at?
They can find me on my website, claudiatmiller.com. They can also find me on LinkedIn. I share a lot of free resources there and live trainings. And just LinkedIn, you can just type in Claudia T. Miller, and they'll be able to find me.
Perfect. Absolute honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Likewise. Well, thank you so much, Josh, for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
All right. Take care.
Will do.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.